And I'd like to call upon our brother Jim Stiles for the much-needed word of exhortation.
Good morning, everyone. Well, we might have a smaller group this morning, but hopefully the exhortation this morning will stir us all up a little bit. Hoping to look at some of the things in Joshua about the story of Caleb. Caleb. What do you know about Caleb? Well, he doesn't show up a whole lot in the Bible. There's really only a couple of places where he shows up. But it's amazing what you can learn from this man and the exhortations that are there from this man, Caleb. I've found he's like a one in a million kind of person. He's a Christadelphian that's a one in a million. When you look at the example that he set for the community, where he came from and his background, just the things that are revealed about Caleb are almost unbelievable when you search out his life. And hopefully this morning we'll get a chance to look at some of those exhortational lessons and get an appreciation for a man that maybe on Memorial Day weekend you can remember forever for the rest of your life, the memorial of Caleb, who stands in the Bible as just a one in a million kind of person, of representing all those characteristics that you just read in Paul's letter to Titus about what a bishop should be or an ecclesial leader should be. You can take all of those things and compile them into this one man, and Caleb is a living example of those kind of characteristics. Of all things, his name means, when you look it up, his name means a dog. Can you imagine that amongst the Jews, that you got a man now who comes up as an ecclesial leader, and they call him a dog, which really became, you know, the nickname for the Gentiles. Like when Paul would say, watch out for the dogs, watch out for those that mutilate the flesh, and he throws that back on the Judaizers of his day, because that's the way they were acting. They were acting like barbarian Gentiles and trying to go around and get all the Jews, all the Gentiles to become circumcised. So that's the name. Here's this ecclesial leader that rises up in the midst, and of all places, the leader of the tribe of Judah. And this man is Caleb the dog. When you go back and look at the background to Caleb's life, you know, when we first run across Caleb, it's back in the story of the spies. It's one of those standard stories that everybody gets in Sunday school in Numbers chapter 13. And just go back and look in Numbers 13 and 14 just to, you know, pick up the background of the little bit that we're told about Caleb at that time. You find out in Numbers chapter 13, when Moses is sending out the spies, and they've come up now from Mount Sinai, they're up to Kadesh Barnea down there in the south part of the Sinai, and he sends the spies up, and they're going to go all through up the land of Israel, and they go all the way up the top and come back down and give their report, and they're gone for 40 days. Well, you find out in verse 6 that from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, is the spy. He's the one who's sent as their ecclesial representative, as the leader of the tribe of Judah. He's the man that they're going to entrust as the leader to go up and spy up the land and then come back and give a report. That's in verse 6 of this chapter. As you're going on down through, you find that in verses 21 to 22, look at the places that they went. It says that they spied out the land in verse 21, and they went up into the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob near the entrance of Hamath, which is way up in the north of Israel, up there, all the way up past the Sea of Chinnereth, or the Sea of Galilee. And they went up through the south and came to Hebron, Haiman, Sheshai, and Talmai. Recognize those names? The descendants of Anak were there. You know, here's these descendants of Anak that were up there in the land that you're going to run into later on in the story of Joshua, and also in the story of Judges chapter 1. So you got the descendants of Anak that were there, and Hebron, or as they call it over in Israel, Hebron, was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And they came to the valley of Eshcol, and they cut down the grapes at that point, and they brought them back on the pole. And then they returned in verse 25 after the 40 days. So you notice in verse 21 that when they went up from the south, they came to Hebron. That was one of the places they stopped, and then they went up on down up through the land. Well, that passage there in verse 22 about stopping at Hebron, that's the basis for Joshua 14. When Caleb comes to Joshua and he says, remember what you told me? Everywhere where we walked, you'd give us the land. He says, I went up and I spied out Hebron, and I want that land. And you'll see that come up in Joshua 14, if you remember in the readings that we just did before all that stuff on Titus. So this is the background to where you pick up this man, Caleb. But look at what happens. We know the story. The spies came back, and the 10 spies gave their bad report. You find out in verse 28 there that they said they saw the descendants of Anak there. And the Amalekites dwelt in the south, and the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites dwelt in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwelt by the sea along the banks of the Jordan. And all these 10 spies are giving this bad report, and they're scaring everybody, and they're telling them about how bad things are, and it's going to be almost an impossible job. And who stands up to quiet the people? Caleb. Caleb quieted the people in verse 30 before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." That's the kind of man this man was. What a great kind of ecclesial person to work with. He had a kind of spirit that just trusted God in all situations. And what a contrast to what was going to go on in the rest of the community at this time. That Caleb comes back and he just like, in response to the other 10 spies, he just says, "Nope, we can do this. We can do this because God is going to be with us and we're going to well able to overcome them." But the other 10 spies, they give their bad report and they say, "Oh, we can't go up," in verse 31. And in verse 33, you know, there's those giants, those descendants of Anak, the giants were there and we're like grasshoppers in their sight. You know, and that's going to come up again in Joshua chapter 14 and in 15 and in Judges chapter 1. Those descendants of Anak keep coming back on the scene and you'll see that there is consistency in Caleb's life. Every time those giants come up, he says, If God is with us, we'll be able to overcome them. That won't be a problem. Let's get up and let's get going." And that's the kind of man that Caleb was. Just a wonderful kind of person to be with. You know, and here you have this story of the spies thrown in, really at the end of, on the heels of Numbers chapter 12. Now, I get a feeling a lot of times in the Bible, what we get is God puts out for us compare and contrast. You know, you remember the story with when you go back and look at Joseph. How Joseph comes in Genesis 37, is such a wonderful, faithful man. And then in Genesis 38, the next chapter, he lays out before you and says, "Well, here's the kind of stuff Judah was doing." While Joseph is up here living in godliness, Judah's down there living in the depths of sin and just totally involved as the businessman of this world. Well, in Numbers chapter 12, you got Miriam and Aaron speaking against Moses. Here are, you know, two ecclesial leaders besides Moses. And they're like, "Well, is God only speaking through Moses? You know, aren't we able to do this too?" And then God has to strike them at that point. And you have the compare and contrast between two people that had been given responsibility and wanted to take more. And then here comes Caleb on the scene, and he just faithfully does his job. Just whatever God asked him to do, whatever was his responsibility, he does his job and doesn't worry about, you know, taking over leadership of something else. He just faithfully comes through. And it's one of these chapters where you can compare and contrast the different responses of other people and Miriam and Aaron, and then also in the whole rest of the 10 spies and the rest of the community. And Caleb is just rising up above it all and faithfully responds to God. So in Numbers 14, then, that's when the people get all upset, and they decide, you know, they're all scared off, and they wish they had died in the land of Egypt in verse 2. Why has God brought them into this land only to fall victim to the sword and victim to these people? And you find in verse 4 that they said to one another, "Let's select a leader and return to Egypt." In fact, in Nehemiah 9, it actually says they picked a leader. Maybe that was Korah, because later on we find that he's another one of these people that isn't happy with his position in life, and he's going to try to grab something even greater. So, you know, they picked a leader at this point, and somebody was going to lead them back to Egypt at this point. And you find that, you know, verse 6, Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, they tear their clothes and they spoke to the congregation of Israel, saying, "The land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. And if the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us. A land flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread, and their protection has departed from them. And the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." So here's Caleb and Joshua standing up in the midst of this congregation of a million people, 600,000 men plus their families. And they stand up and say, "Look, trust God. He's going to give us the land, and all these people you're scared about, they're our bread. We're going to eat them up when we go into battle." And look what happens in verse 10. All the congregation said to stone them with stones. Imagine that, you know, in ecclesial life. You know, here you are trying to give a faithful report, and you got a million people around you, and you're standing up with Joshua and trying to encourage the people to go in and take the land, And a million people are standing there, and the leaders are saying, pick up stones and stone these men, and let's get rid of them. We got a leader we're picked, we're going back to Egypt. And if it wasn't for God standing up at this point and saving Joshua and Caleb, they probably would have been stoned. Caleb would have been a dead man because the rest of the ecclesia had rejected him. You know, what an example of ecclesial life when you look at it. And what an example of patience and faith and just endurance to the end in ecclesial life. That even when the entire congregation is against you, Caleb and Joshua, they stand up, they give their good report, and they continue to faithfully work in this ecclesia for another 38 years. They're just a great example of people that stand as examples to us, at least, of an ecclesial life and family life. No matter what happens, you just keep going and trust in God. You know, the rest of Numbers 14 is that's where that famous passage comes from. We quote a lot in verse 21, that as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Sometimes we forget, though, the context of that verse. That verse comes within a context of God wanting to wipe out all the Israelites and start over with Moses and Joshua and Caleb and some faithful people. And God says, well, as when Moses intercedes, he says, yeah, nevertheless, yeah, I'll do it. I'll pardon the iniquity this time. But as truly as I live, I'm going to fill this earth with something better than what you're living amongst today. And that was his promise that he gave them at that time. But you find out in verse 23 there that he says that all the rest of these people, they're not going to see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected me see it. But my servant Caleb, look at how he's singled out. Out of all the people, God says first, none of the rest of those people that rejected me are going to see this land, but my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring him into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. Now, that's a promise God made. And Caleb later on, he says, look, God swore to me that day. In the same way he swore to eliminate all the rest of those people, and he took an oath, he swore that me and my family are going to be able to inherit this land. And we're going to get Hebron, like you said, all this area that we walked through. We walked through that land and went up to Hebron. He says, look, remember, Moses, that's what happened back then 38 years ago. Actually, it's 45 years ago when you get to Joshua 14. He says, look, remember that? That's what God promised me. You said it. God made the promise. It was an oath that I'm going to be able to go in. It was as truly as I live. It's all part of the oath that God swore at this time, that Caleb and his descendants would get the land because he had a different spirit in him. And so the result is, of course, that God sends the plague at this point, and the people, at least the 10 spies, are killed by the plague in verse 37. The very men who brought the evil report about the land died by the plague before the Lord. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, remained alive of all the men who went to spy out the land. So they're the only two spies that made it, Joshua and Caleb. And I think you'll see why as we go along, why it's always represented as Joshua and Caleb. Because you've got two different types of people here, I think, in these two men. And they certainly represented back at this time those that were going to finally gain the inheritance that God would give them in the latter days. So the bottom line out of Numbers 13 and 14, brothers and sisters, for us, that we can take as exhortational lessons this morning, is to remember that Caleb, when you look at his life, he's one out of a million. He's one of these people who's faithful. When the whole congregation, 600,000 people, are ready to pick up stones and stone Caleb and Joshua, and they're ready to pick another leader and go back to Egypt, he's the kind of person that's willing to stand up in the midst of all that and say, look, it's okay, trust God, he promised us he'd give us the land, and these people are going to be our bread. And one of the great lessons that I found about Caleb, brothers and sisters, for ourselves, is that here's Caleb now having to live with what God just told him, that these people are going to go for 40 years. For 40 years, they're going to wander around this wilderness, going in circles, living in this desert. And because of the failure of all the congregation, all of his friends, all the people that Caleb knew, because of the failure of the ecclesia, it was going to cost Caleb 38 years of wandering around, waiting and waiting and waiting to inherit what he was ready to go get right now, today. And he waited. He just patiently waited. And it's almost like the 38 years goes by, and you pick up Caleb at the end of the 38 years, and he hasn't missed a step. He hasn't missed a bit of faith. and his body's just as strong as it was 38 years ago. And it's like God just preserved him right through that 38 years and said, you were ready back then, now you get to do it. And that's where you're at in Joshua 14. And it's a great lesson of ecclesial life, brothers and sisters, that when people in our family, when our moms and dads make mistakes, and as children we have to live with the mistakes of mom and dad, or as parents, when our children make mistakes and we have to live with the mistakes of our kids, or in ecclesial life, when brothers and sisters make mistakes, we can't let those mistakes discourage us. Caleb could have easily just turned his back at that time and said, well, that's not fair. Why should I have to wait 38 years? Why should I have to wander through the wilderness all this time? I didn't make that mistake. But he was committed to his family, he's committed to his ecclesia, and he works with those people, and he works with those people because he trusts that God said that after 38 years, after the 40 years are up, you and your family will inherit the land. And he just kept going. That's the kind of spirit that Caleb had. So when you pick him up in Joshua 14, let's go back to the chapter we just looked at this morning. You'd be surprised, you know, you read through a little chapter like Joshua 14, and you read through that and you think, well, you know, what kind of exhortation you got to find in Joshua 14? But actually, Joshua 14 reveals a lot of little tidbits about little events that are happening as the children of Israel come into the land, because it's one of the rare places where you actually get any time periods, any references made about how old everybody was and how long it took. So Joshua 14 is actually one of those pivotal chapters in the book of Joshua to try to lay out the whole chronology of how things work. So we find out, you hit Joshua 14, 45 years have gone by since that event when Caleb faithfully brought back the report. You have the 38 years of continuing to wander through the wilderness, and then 7 years. We're into the story of Joshua now. You wonder, like, well, how long did these wars go on that we just read about in the readings in, you know, Joshua chapter 10 and 11 and 12? How long did that actually take? Well, you find from Joshua 14, it's about 7 years. That's how long it took to conquer the land. When he went through and did the central campaign, and then they went down in the south and did the southern campaign, then they went up to the north and did the northern campaign. We read through those three chapters in 3 days, and we just think, well, that was quick. That's 7 years it took. 7 years has actually gone by when you hit Joshua 14, and you find that out because of the time periods that Caleb reveals as to how old he is now, how old he was then, and how old he would have been when he went in the land. Because if you just glance through the chapter, you can see, like, in verse 7 in Joshua 14, he says, I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. So he was 40 years old at that time, and I brought back word to him as was in my heart. See, that's the kind of person Caleb was. He told him what was in his heart, that God was going to be able to give them that land. So he's 40 years old when he went to spy out the land. If you Bible mark, if you put a note in there to look up Deuteronomy 2 and 14, you'll find out that it actually took 2 years to get to Kadesh Barnea. When they went down to Mount Sinai and then they came back up, they'd actually been in the Sinai desert that period for about 2 years. You find that out in Deuteronomy 2 at verse 14. And so Caleb was really 38 years old when he left Egypt. He was 38 at that time. And now you find in verse 10 of Joshua 14, he says, and now behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years. 45 years? So when he was 38 years old when he left Egypt, and now he's 45 years old, what you can do is you can figure out exactly how long it's taken to get in the land at this point, and this is where everybody figures out that it took 7 years in order to conquer the land. But we tend to read through and you just quickly read through three chapters and we think it was like bang, bang, bang. That central campaign and the southern campaign and the northern campaign, that's 7 years they spent where all the tribes faithfully were warring together and they stuck together as a unit. And the 2.5 tribes that were going to get their land on the east of the Jordan, they kept and stayed there as part of the army and, you know, sent their family and left their families back on the other side. That's a 7-year period in there. According to this, when you read it on through, if you take the 85 years that he is now, minus the 78 years, you get 7 years they spent taking the land. So what's happened at this point is that in Joshua 1 to 13, what Joshua has done in the central campaign and the southern campaign and the northern campaign is he's wiped out all the major fortified cities, and now it's time for the individual Israelite tribes and their families to individually go out and take their land. All the major fortified cities are gone, and the problem Joshua has at this point is that hardly anybody wants to leave the group. They like living together. They all grew up together. 38 years wandering in the wilderness, and all their parents are gone. And for 7 years now, they've been fighting and conquering the land, and Joshua's having a terrible time getting them to go out and search out the land and actually get their inheritance. Most of the people don't even want to do it. And you find that there's very few tribes that did. You know, back in Joshua 13, we got the 2.5 tribes that were over on the other side of the Jordan, and he gave them their land. The Levites didn't get any land at the end of 13. You find in chapter 15 that it talks about the land of Judah. So Judah went down and took their area in the south, and Ephraim took their area in the middle, and the western tribe of Manasseh, the half-tribe, got their spot. But the other 7.5 tribes didn't even bother going after their land. And you find in Joshua 18 that, you know, you get near the end of the book. In Joshua 18, God finally tells Joshua, he says, look, you know, how long are you going to wait? And Joshua has to go to the 7 tribes which hadn't received their inheritance in Joshua 18:2. And he says, look, how long will you neglect to go in and possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers has given you? Pick 3 people from each tribe, survey the land, and let's get it done. Because the 7 tribes didn't even care enough to go search out their land, didn't want to even bother surveying. They were happy to just live in the big group, and that's what they were satisfied with. And what a great lesson of ecclesial life, brothers and sisters, of how simple and easy it is. We come to meeting on Sunday morning, and we're all in the big group. And we come together, we go to places in the big group. It's easier to be godly in the big group. But then, when you go home, and then when you go to work, and then when you go to, like, individually seek out your inheritance, that's when the challenges come. And it's just so much easier to stay in the big group and not go out there and seek out your inheritance where you have to stand on your own or just with your family, and you got to go conquer those giants like Caleb was willing to do. Well, that gives you a bit of the framework for how, after 45 years now, from the time when Caleb said, look, let's go, we can take the land, and the rest of the people are saying, no, we can't do this, Caleb, they're ready to stone him. Now, 45 years goes by, and Caleb's the same. He hasn't changed. But the rest of the tribes, the 7 tribes, they're still the same way. They don't want to bother going out and getting their land. There's too many Canaanites around to still beat. And it's too much trouble, and we're all tired fighting and all that. But Caleb is ready to go. Joshua 14. So that's what you find in Joshua 14. When Caleb reminds Joshua in verses 6, 7, 8, there, that little section there, he says, look, you know, here's the story. Verse 6 there, the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal. So this is how we know this is not the same later on as Joshua 18. In Joshua 18, they were up at Shiloh because Ephraim already had their inheritance. But here we are in Gilgal. This is where they'd started the campaign 7 years earlier. And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite. That's interesting. He says to him, you know the word which the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me and Kadesh Barnea? He says, Joshua, you and I, we're the only two around still, other than maybe a few Levites. We're the only two of that original group. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. What a phrase he takes, like, right out of Joshua 2, where Rahab had said, all the Canaanites, Rahab said, their hearts have melted before you. They were afraid. And now Caleb says, that's what the spies did to the people of Israel. They made their heart melt. But I wholly followed the Lord my God. That's interesting, the way he responds that way. I wholly followed the Lord my God. Because he did. Yahweh was his God. And he's stating that as a fact. He followed Yahweh his God. In verse 9, Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you wholly followed Yahweh my God. See, that's Moses saying that. You followed Yahweh my God. And Caleb's saying, well, Yahweh's my God. And you wonder, like, why is this going on about Yahweh my God and Yahweh my God? Are they just saying, well, that Yahweh was their God? Or is there something more to that? And I think you'll see as we go along that there really is. If you wonder where that comes from, if you go back to Deuteronomy 1, or just make a note to put that in the margin there, you can actually find out what Caleb is referring to. It's in Deuteronomy 1, back at verse 36. But this is when God actually spoke, so you can find out where this is coming from. And Moses is recounting what happened at that time when the spies were sent out. And in verse 34 of Deuteronomy 1, Moses says that the Lord heard the sound of your words and was angry and took an oath. So this is where the swearing of the oath comes from. that surely not one of these of this evil generation shall see the good land which I swore to give to their fathers, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he shall see it, and to him and his children I am giving the land on which he walked, because he wholly followed the Lord. This is where Caleb's going back to. He says, look, Moses, you just reminded us, you know, 7 years earlier, Moses had told us, right before we went in the land, this was the situation. God had taken an oath. He swore they would not go in the land, but Caleb, you and your family are going to get the land everywhere where you walk. So what he says in verse 9 here of Joshua 14, he says, look, Moses swore on that day, saying, and he's actually swearing really what the oath that God had given, surely the land where your foot is trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's. See, that's picked up right out of Deuteronomy 1 and verse 36, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. And now we got in verse 10 that Caleb says, now look, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said. Here's the proof. God has kept me alive these 45 years, just like he had said, ever since the Lord spoke the word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, here I am this day, 85 years old. That's how old he is right now. And yet, verse 11, I'm as strong this day as I was on the day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in. He's 85 years old. What God had done, he preserved his life. He not only let him live longer, he actually preserved him, just kept him at that point in his life where he was as strong now as he was back then, 45 years ago. And you look at the spirit of Caleb, what he basically says to Joshua at this point, he says, look, verse 12, give me this mountain of what the Lord spoke in that day. For you heard in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. He's still willing to go out to battle. He's willing to go out and fight these Anakim right now after 45 years, where the rest of the community back earlier was afraid to go up and take the land. And so Joshua blesses him, and he gives them Hebron. He gives them Abraham's city. And you wonder, like, why did he pick Hebron? But this is a man who was like committed to be part of the community of Israel. And of all things, when he gets his choice of what he wants to pick, he says, I want that city, Hebron. You promised me if we walked up through that area and we walked through it, we could have that. That's the city I want. Because it was Abraham's city. And that's the kind of man Caleb was. He was a descendant of Abraham in spirit. Because he really believed that the promises to Abraham would be fulfilled, and he wanted to be part of this community, and he says, I want to be part of this more than anything. I want Abraham's city. That's the city he lived in, the city he settled in. That's where his bones are. I want Abraham's city. And what Joshua did is he gives him Hebron down there in the south. Hebron, and he ends up being a Levitical city as well. You find out later in Joshua. And it ends up being a city of refuge. And Caleb ends up settling there in the city of Hebron with the Levites all around him at that point, because that's the kind of man that Caleb was. He wanted that for his family and for himself, so that his family would be able to live there forever. If you want the references on Hebron, it's in later on in Joshua 20. You find in verse 7 that it was one of the cities of refuge. And in Joshua 21 at verse 13, you find out that it was one of the Levitical cities, that's the city of Hebron. So perhaps that's why Caleb wanted it. So, but Joshua 15, the next chapter, goes on to actually tell you that not only did Caleb say that, well, maybe God will be able to give us this, maybe we'll be able to drive out these Anakim, you know, it wasn't just a bunch of words. In Joshua 15, you'll notice, you'll get down to verse 13 when he's talking about giving out the inheritance of Judah, and he sidetracks for a minute. He says, yeah, and part of Judah, don't forget now, is Caleb gets Hebron. And he's singled out there. And you'll find out why. Why does he keep separating out Caleb from the rest of the community? Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the man whose name means the dog. Well, you find in verse 13 that to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave a portion among the children of Judah. That's interesting. He gets a portion among the children of Judah when he's actually from Judah. According to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, namely Kirjath Arba, which is Hebron, and Arba was the father of Anak there. And Caleb drove out the three sons of Anak. Finally, he gets to drive them out, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak. Then he went up from there to the inhabitants of Debir, for Debir was formerly Kirjath Sefer, And Caleb said, whoever attacks Kiriath Sefer and takes it, I'll give him Aksah, my daughter's wife. So Othniel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, took it, and he gave him Aksah, his daughter, his wife. Now, that's exactly the same story that shows up in Judges chapter 1. But we got a new player on the scene right now. You notice we got Othniel in verse 17. Othniel, the son of Kenaz. You see, what this does is it leads into another little aspect of Caleb's life. And you try to figure out, like, who in the world was this man? Where did he come from? And why was he of such a different spirit? Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenazite. Well, we find out in verse 17 of this chapter that Othniel is his brother. In Judges chapter 1, it calls him his younger brother. But you notice how Othniel, in verse 17, it says there he's the son of Kenaz. The son of Kenaz. Who in the world is that? Well, when you put all the pieces together, the best that, you know, I'm looking at our expositors, I found this is an area that Christadelphians saw that I found most of the commentators, everything I looked at, nobody ever caught on to this. But Brother John Martin did, Brother Harry Whitaker did, and many of our writers in the Christadelphian magazines over the years have caught on to what happens with the story of Caleb. But here's what, when you look at the background of Caleb, here's that when you piece it together, here's the way it looks. In Joshua 4 and 15 here, we find out that Othniel, the son of Kenaz, is Caleb's brother. Judges chapter 1 says the same thing. It actually calls him his younger brother there. And you put the pieces together, it looks like Othniel and Caleb were related. They're brothers. And possibly both sons of Jephunneh, although it always calls Othniel the son of Kenaz. So then you will find out, well, who in the world is Kenaz? Well, Kenaz is the one from which Joshua is called, Caleb is called Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenazite. That Kenazite is actually somebody who's of the family of Kenaz. So then you wonder, well, who in the world is this Kenaz fella? Well, you go back to Genesis 36, of all places, and you pick up where in the world Kenaz come from. And this is the little window into Caleb's life that if you're not careful, you miss it when you're going through the Bible. Even though there's hints dropped all along the way about this man Caleb. Where in the world did he come from? How in the world did he get this spirit of faith that was in him? Well, you find out in Genesis chapter 36, at verse 11, he's giving the descendants of Eliphaz, who's one of the sons of Esau. And in verse 10 there, you see that these were the names of Esau's sons, Eliphaz, his son. We got Eliphaz right there. And then in verse 11, the sons of Eliphaz were Teman, Omar, Zephug, Datam, and Kenaz. Kenaz was a grandson of Esau. He was an Edomite. And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, actually was not a Jew. He was somebody that had been incorporated into the Jewish community, perhaps by some kind of family marriage of some kind. He must have married into the family of Judah. He becomes incorporated into the family of Judah. And here he comes, either him or his dad, Jephunneh, one of them at some point had opted out of the Edomite tribe and joined the community of Israel. And no wonder he keeps saying that Yahweh is my God. No wonder it says in Joshua 15, you get those little hints that are laid out there. You notice that in Joshua 15, that Caleb, when he gets Hebron in verse 13, you know, why in the world say this? That he gives Caleb a portion among the children of Judah. Well, you'd say, well, wasn't he part of Judah anyways? See, he wasn't by birth. He was somebody who got incorporated as a Gentile. The dog Caleb became incorporated into the Jewish community, rose above all the rest of the people in his spiritual life, and was fully committed to the promises of Abraham. More than the people were. More than the natural Jews were. And this man just waited faithfully, patiently for 38 years, 45 years, until he could finally sit down in Hebron and drive out those descendants of Anak and have his city, Abraham's city, and be incorporated into the promises to Abraham. What an example of faith, brothers and sisters, among the community of Israel to have a man like this. Now, you know why this back and forth play goes on between Caleb back in Joshua 14 of saying that, look, I followed Yahweh, my God. And Moses would say back to him, yeah, because you followed Yahweh, my God. You see, these people were committing themselves to Yahweh being their God, and Moses realized that it really wasn't his God. You'll notice the hint at the end of Joshua 14. It's one of those things that's worth underlining at the end of the reading for today. Did you notice in verse 14 that Hebron, in Joshua 14, Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenazite to this day. See, there it is again. He's the Kenazite. Because he wholly followed Yahweh, Elohim of Israel. See, why in the world even say that if he had been born in the community, raised in the community, and he was actually one of the Jews? So here you have this man whose name means the dog, coming in from the outside, standing up amongst the people as a representative in the community of faith. And no wonder Joshua and Caleb are raised up in the Old Testament as the two examples. There's your Jew and Gentile, the faithful two that are going to lead the people into the land. And Caleb is a tremendous reminder to all of us, brethren and sisters, that it doesn't matter about our family background. It doesn't matter where we've come from. What God is interested is what are we going to do with where we're at right now? And what an example to those who come in from the outside, or for those of you who perhaps come from families. Maybe you're not one of the big families in the Christadelphian community. Or maybe we will move to an ecclesia that's not one of the big ecclesias in the Christadelphian community. It doesn't matter where we came from. What matters is, what are we going to do about it now? What are we going to do tomorrow? What are we going to do later today? What are we going to do with the rest of our life? Are we going to be like a Caleb that's willing to like forget about the past and move on into the future and rise up as a spiritual leader amongst the community? Or are we going to always make excuses? Well, I didn't come from the right family. I wasn't from the right ecclesia. All the people wanted to stone me, therefore I can't do anything in ecclesial life. This man is a tremendous example. He's a one in a million of somebody who is willing to trust God, move on, just keep pushing forward, patiently waiting for the day when God would finally let him take that inheritance and him and his family would be able to sit down in Abraham's city and live in the land of Israel. So this morning, as we go to take the emblems this morning, what an example from this man, Caleb. And it's amazing to me how similar, when you look at Caleb's life, how similar it was to the Lord Jesus Christ. We can learn the lesson of not worrying about the family background. And we will look at our Lord. Look at how often the Pharisees would come at him and he'd say, well, we know our father. What about yours? And they would always throw back at him this problem about, well, you know, you're an illegitimate son. You don't worry about the family background. You keep pushing on. He knew God was his father. Just like Caleb, didn't worry about the family problem. He kept pushing on. He got involved, did his part, never wanted to rise up beyond what God had given him. He just faithfully did his part in the community. And let's live by example like Caleb did. You look at what he did. He didn't just talk the talk. He walked it. When it came time to go out and drive out those descendants of Anak, he's the first one. Even after 45 years, he's still willing to go. And when he's 85 years old, because he said it may be that God will drive them out, because he trusted in his God. Just like the Lord Jesus Christ, fully convinced that God was going to be able to use him to destroy those giants of sin. And just like Caleb, brothers and sisters, don't become discouraged at the unfaithfulness of others. Look at the Lord Jesus Christ. If he had become discouraged by the apostles, as he's trying to explain to them that the Son of Man is going to be treated rough by the Jews and the leaders, and he's going to have to die, and all the disciples are doing is arguing about, well, when the kingdom starts, let's see, what position are you going to have, and where are you going to have, and who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom? And that's all they're worried about. And they couldn't even watch with him for the 1 hour in the garden. He didn't become discouraged by the others. Instead, he kept pushing on. And even when the others make decisions in life that cost us, what an example Caleb is of not worrying about all that. Don't let it get you down, but keep moving on, knowing and trusting that God knows what's happening, just like Christ did. Imagine if he had gotten discouraged when he actually thought about the fact, why am I going through all this? I didn't commit those sins. It's all those people. And they still are with me. Even when he tried, when he was working with his apostles, he tried as hard as he could, and they still continuously just showed example after example of unbelief. He could have easily become discouraged by the failure of the people all around him. But he kept pushing on because he knew it was God's will and that this was the only way to save the group. And let's make sure, brethren and sisters, that we follow the example of Caleb, that if Christ remains away as long as it is, that we faithfully endure to the end. Don't become discouraged by the events of life, in ecclesial life or family life. Keep pushing on, fully convinced that God is faithful and he will reward us in the end, and we'll have an opportunity to sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of God, and it will all be worth it.